Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me and all that we do, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere at Hawk Blogger. And it's a Wednesday, which means we are previewing the Seahawks' next opponent, the Carolina Panthers, who are, you know, at least for now, the Seahawks' final cross-country 10 a.m. game of the season. And we have Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer with us this morning to talk about this matchup. Mike, man, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Hopefully you can hear my kid playing video games in the other room.
Oh, man, it's winter break. Like, we've all got stuff going on. I won't share, you know, my ER stories from last night or any of the fun stuff going on here. But you know what? Kids get home. They do crazy things. I think I saw behind you when you were moving your head. It looks like a sunny day over there in Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah, not too shabby. I think it's like probably like 50 something degrees out. It's been pretty good. The weather yesterday was terrific. The Panthers practiced inside their stadium with kind of like a walkthrough, and it's just a nice day out.
Yeah, I think I saw that there's maybe a little bit of a chance of rain on Sunday, but going to be upwards of 70 degrees, at least as the current weather calls for. So be a little bit of a shock to the system for us in Seattle who are going to be coming out there. Be nice to be able to be outside and not shivering. But talk to us for a second about this Panthers team who has confounded just about every analyst out there who is – you know, dismissed Bryce Young. He's never going to be it. Now he's great. The team is going the wrong direction. Fire everybody to Dan Morgan should be executive of the year. Back and back and back and forth. What's going on with the Panthers this year?
This team's impossible to figure out whether you covered them locally or you covered them nationally. It's just a matter of they'll have like a huge, huge win and then a massive letdown. And then it's like, well, who are the real Carolina Panthers? And I think what's interesting is we've seen over the last 5 weeks, Bryce Young has probably had his best stretch of his career. He's thrown for 10 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions. He's completing 66.7% of his passes, which would be an exponential career high for him. And he's seemingly put it together. Dave Canales has kind of been kind of wishy-washy as a play caller. It feels like he's still kind of figuring that out because obviously he's also the head coach and he's balancing all this stuff, but he's only been a play caller for like 3 years. So he's still growing. So there's inconsistency there. But I think this team with Tetero McMillan and Rico Dowdle and Chuba Hubbard and Jalen Coker, and you're seeing all these guys kind of emerge. It kind of reminds you a little bit of when Pete and Dave and all those guys got to Seattle, you know, in the early 2010s, where it was like, yeah, they're not that great, but they play their butts off for their head coach and they can beat contenders, but they can't beat all of like the muck of the league either. So it's a weird group is what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Bryce Young is at the center of all that, you know, former number one overall pick. And there's all the folks that are like, oh, man, they blew it by not getting CJ Stroud. And then he looked fantastic at the end of last season. And he struggled the beginning of this season. I was watching him against against the Bucks this past week. And he looked mature and control, you know, moving around very comfortable, even under pressure. And that touchdown pass when he was scrambling and as soon as the defender left his man, just tossed it over there to wide open player. Like, that was a savvy play. You know, what's your take on the trajectory of Bryce Young?
Well, I think he's a guy who, when you watch him at Alabama, the reason why you would be okay with the Panthers taking him over CJ Stroud is because of his ability to improvise. He's not what you would call a mobile quarterback by trade. He is not what you would call a supreme pocket presence. But what he can do is he can extend plays within the pocket and improvise and throw on the run. Like, if you compare his numbers against Kyler Murray's with throwing on the run, you would think that Bryce Young is an exponentially more dynamic player on the move, and he is, really, because he is very good at making the most of a tight situation. We saw it at Alabama, and once you allow him to play freely, he's performed. Frank Reich didn't do a good job of doing that. Dave Canales early on in his tenure did not do a good job of doing that. And then we saw at the end of last year, they let him kind of cook and it played off pretty well. Then they let him cook the first 2 weeks of the season this year and it looked terrible. And it seemed like they scaled things back on him. Now, you know, again, sorry, kids playing video games.
Don't worry about it. We're good.
Now it seems like he and Canales have reached a play calling and rhythm understanding where he understands that the offensive line has had 10 different combinations in 15 games and you're going to have quirks and pass protection. So just let the kid do what he needs to do. And I think Bryce has really taken advantage.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it feels like Bryce Young can bring you back from the dead, right? Mm-hmm. Leads the NFL since he's entered the league in game-winning drives. I think it's like 13 or something like that. But that also means that there's been a lot of times where they've been trailing at the end of games for him to be bringing him back. So does he have trouble at the beginning of games? Does the team have trouble? Is there any like pattern to why they fall behind?
To me, it's like when you were in college or high school and you waited to study for the test till like the night before, or you waited to write the paper till the night before. Some people can do that because they thrive on the pressure. That's who Bryce is. I was a guy who turned in, like, if I got assigned a paper like 3 weeks in advance, that was done by week two, and I wanted it off my plate, and I felt like I could flourish other ways. Bryce is a guy who can cram for the test and get an A. And I think that's not sustainable in the NFL, as we know. But I think with the schedule that they've had, they've faced a lot of kind of mediocre teams and been able to beat them. They've been able to surprise the Packers, the Rams. I think as he matures, he's got to learn to start quicker. And they've gotten off to some pretty good opening drives. I actually think he and Dave are very different in that Dave is actually a really good pregame schemer who starts fast and then kind of reacts to the way the game's going, probably too much. Whereas Bryce is a guy who has to kind of find his footing. He's almost like a running back who needs a ton of carries to kind of get the rhythm of the game. And so that's kind of been the push and pull, I think, of the inconsistency there, especially starting early.
I got to tell you, Mike, as someone who, I mean, I've watched the Panthers this year, but not really, really closely. I've watched a number of their games. And I've basically just paid attention to what's going on. To try to come up to speed on this team and make sense this season has been a fun project, I will say. And so you talked about the Packers game. You go into Green Bay, beat a Packers team, still had Micah Parsons. Like still had Jordan Love and win that game. Beat the Rams, who, you know, are one of the most talented teams, complete teams in the NFL. And then lose twice to the Saints and, you know, lose some games that you just wouldn't expect them to lose, get blown out, you know, by the Patriots, by the Bills, look like they're not close. When I tried to find some sort of patterns to this, there's a few things that came up and I want to get your take on whether any of these are on the right track. So first things first, when the Panthers rush for fewer than 100 yards, they generally are going to lose. The only time they've won is when the Falcons, you know, they beat the Falcons in overtime. And that's when Bryce Young, who seems to love playing the Falcons, had, I think, 419 yards passing. The other thing is if they turn the ball over, they're 1-5 when they have two or more turnovers. Now, that's pretty standard for any team, but, you know, it's certainly an issue here. The Seahawks, on the other hand, turn the ball over all the time and seem to find ways to win. And then the other thing that kind of came up for me was when the Panthers have had trouble scoring, which shouldn't be a shock that that's a problem, but when they score fewer than 20 points, every loss that they have this season, they've scored fewer than 20 points other than that bizarre game against the Cardinals when they scored 22 and there was some crazy, you know, comeback at the end. So what of those, if any of those, stand out to you as potential patterns to pay attention to?
I mean, they're all on point. When the running game doesn't work and the run defense doesn't work, they're going to lose. And that we saw that a lot in the first half of the season, especially before week five when they played the Dolphins. From the turnover standpoint, that was kind of the part of the problem with playing free, right? We saw Bryce Young create a bunch of turnovers against Jacksonville and Arizona when it looked like all was lost. I mean, they got off to about as worse of a start as you could have. And it was just, it was tough. But I think as you've seen since kind of week 12, Bryce has been able to hold on to the ball for the most part. And I think something clicked in that Atlanta game, excuse me. He's feeling himself right now. He's got some confidence. He trusts his wide receivers. He's spraying the ball around the field. For a while, though, the big issue for them was everything was about Tetrarrow McMillan. Like, he was making up like 60% of their target share. Like, I understand you can have a number one wide receiver and go to him all the time. You know, JSN gets a pretty large target share. But when it's 66% and the rest of your guys aren't stepping up when they are targeted, that can be a problem. Now they've kind of spread the ball around. Jalen Coker's emerged. They're using Chuba Hubbard more in the passing game. I think he's gained a lot of trust there. And that's led to less turnovers because he's not just targeting the same guy over and over again. The coverage can't just map out bracket coverage against McMillan. We've actually seen over the last couple of weeks where he's had to go to Jalen Coker to win games, and that's worked out. And I think not making it all about McMillan has helped them out, both from a turnover standpoint, but also from Bryce being able to produce at a higher level.
Now, is it Leggett or Leggett?
Leggett.
Leggett. So he was a guy that they bet big on last year, and it seemed to struggle a little bit. Had some, I think, mental mistakes in this last game, you know, in terms of where his foot placement was and things along the sideline. But where's he in terms of his development?
Not great. I would say that he is dealing with kind of a case of the Keon Coleman's, right? Like, it's just not, it's not clicking to the point where you're like, wow, this guy was worth the top 32 pick. And I think he was overdrafted. I think that was clear at the time. They really wanted that fifth year option for him, because if he does pan out, then you've got a cost effective fifth year for him and you don't have to extend him right away. And so I think it's just not worked out. I think Jalen Coker has kind of exceeded him in a lot of areas. Coker seems like the more technically savvy player. He also plays to his speed, whereas, you know, Leggett has never played to his speed. That's never been a thing. They tried to make him an X receiver last year. He struggled mightily. They tried to make him a Z receiver this year. He's been like, there's times where you forget he even is there. He had a brutal drop against the Bucs this past week. Mm-hmm. The drops have been an issue. I think they thought that they could turn him into a Deebo Samuel like gadget player. That hasn't really worked out either. So it's been kind of a struggle. And that's why McMillan's been such a blessing to this team, because for years they've spent high picks on wide receivers and none of them have panned out. Terrace Marshall, Jonathan Mingo, who has yet to score a touchdown even in Dallas. And then you have Leggett, and then you've got this guy in McMillan who is about to break the receiving record for rookies for this team. He's on the cusp of 1,000 yards. He's got 7 touchdowns on the year. Like, he looks the part. He should win Offensive Rookie of the Year, frankly. And I think it's one of those things where Leggett's kind of getting lost in the sauce. Mm.
We're talking to Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer, covers the Panthers over there in Carolina. And Mike, let's turn our attention to the health of the Panthers, because there's some guys that look like they're getting ready to come back. Kemba Kwanu, the left tackle, I think is on his way back, almost played in this last game. Also, Tershawn Wharton, the defensive tackle, may be coming back. And then the big question mark for me, Robert Hunt, the, you know, great guard who had a biceps tear since week 2, has been on the IR. Questions about whether he's going to open his practice window. I'm curious your perspective. If they do you think there's a chance he plays this week, or is he going to need some time to ramp up?
I'll talk about Robert Hunt first. I think they're very mindful of his strength, right? It's not just like he's got fresh legs. He can go, but it's a matter of being able to take on defenders. And I think maybe what you'll see is, even if they open up his window in the next couple of hours, they might allow him to get to practice, be a little bit more physical, and then, you know, use him as a ace in the hole for the Bucks game, which is really the one that matters for this team. Turk Wharton, kind of an underwhelming signing. I mean, he was definitely overpaid in free agency, but he is a cog. And so you do wonder if he'll be there. He's kind of a situational pass rusher who's been put in a role where, like, if I were an opposing offensive coordinator, if I were the Seahawks, I would run at him every single play. Every single play, Brian. Every single play.
Every play.
And then Icky, I think he'll be back. He really wanted to play. He was dealing with some knee soreness. Yosh Nijman, the swing tackle, actually played very, very well in his stead this past week, though.
So, I mean, that offensive line to me is one of the real strengths of this team, and they can lean on some teams. I think they leaned on the Panthers. When you look at the defense, we haven't talked at all about the defense, and you have a couple more minutes, Mike, to chat about the defense. So Derek Brown should have been a Pro Bowler, great, great player, great inside player. J.C. Horn is the lone Pro Bowler for the Panthers. I think people know him for his interceptions, but he's also given up 5 touchdowns this year. And then there's former Seahawk Mike Jackson at corner, who I know had some interesting comments yesterday about why the Seahawks and how the Seahawks traded him a year ago. But what to make of this defense? Like, how do they, what do they play well? And what don't they play well?
So they're about allowing roughly 60 yards less per game in the rushing game, which was really the crux of their struggles last year. They allowed like the most rushing yards since 1980 last year. Now they're allowing roughly 120 a game. That's really helped, but they haven't sacrificed coverage. Coverage has been pretty good. Mike Jackson has 34 pass breakups over the last 2 years in 32 games. J.C. Horn and Mike Jackson have combined for 8 interceptions, which I believe is tied with like several DB combinations for the second most in the league as a total. And their safeties are really opportunistic. Trevin Merrick's kind of like the guy that stirs the drink. They use him in multiple different ways. He'll play dime linebacker, he'll play nickel corner, and he'll play box safety. They've got a lot of opportunistic guys on the defense, like Lathan Ransom, who had the game-sealing pick this past week. Nick Scorton's a guy you really want to watch, though. He is very fun. He might be the smartest defensive rookie I've ever covered. Like, not might, he is. Extremely good run defender, able to stiff out screens like he's like a 9-year vet. Just a very smart player. You'll notice him almost immediately. He's number 11. And then Derek Brown, like you said, has just been sensational. He leads the league in defensive line pass breakups. He's got a career high 5 sacks, probably should have had 1 or 2 more, but kind of got, you know, the stat guys kind of messed it up. And really that's like the breakdown of the team. But I think they're weak at linebacker. You can run at them. Kenneth Walker's kind of like the worst type of runner for them because they really struggle when guys get outside the tackle box. And as we all know, you know, Walker can break out for big runs. I think they struggle mightily against speed, and Shaheed was a problem for them when he was in New Orleans. So that's something that J.C. Horn and Mike Jack have kind of struggled with. But I got to tell you, it's hard to find a tandem that has achieved with their length the way that these two guys have. And I think they are going to be a problem.
So when you look at this matchup with the Seahawks, who are currently, you know, roughly a touchdown favorite in Carolina, what do you see? How do the Panthers win this game? And, you know, do the Panthers win this game?
I'm picking the Seahawks. I think this game means a lot more to the Seahawks than it does to the Panthers. The Panthers can lose this game since they won last week and still win the division. You know, the only way that this game really is like truly meaningful is if the Dolphins somehow upset the Buccaneers, which I wouldn't trust them to do that. If that were to happen and the Panthers were to beat the Seahawks, they would claim the division. It'd be done. They could rest their starters next week. I don't see that happening. But what I would say is the number 3 seed is still open. If the Eagles lose out and the Panthers win out, they could get the number 3 seed. So that's their motivation. Then again, the NFC West is just like dynamite right now. You know what I mean? Like everybody's good. All three of those guys could, or all three of those teams could be in the Super Bowl. And I just think the one thing that I would worry about if I were a Seahawks fan is Sam's tendency to turn the ball over. Because if he puts the ball in harm's way, this is an extremely opportunistic defense. I think they're more opportunistic than good, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think if they put the ball up in harm's way, J.C. Horn, Mike Jackson, Lathan Ransom, even Nick Scott can make a play. The Rams learned that a couple of weeks ago. And so I think the main goal for the Seahawks would be to protect the ball. Lean on Kenneth Walker, and I think they win.
Makes sense. Mike, last question for you. As someone who hasn't spent much time in Charlotte, where should I be looking for a good meal?
That's a great question. As somebody who hasn't spent a lot of time in Charlotte, mostly working.
That could be an offline question if you need to think about it.
Yeah, I think the barbecue joints, City Barbecue is pretty good. We like that one, but that's a little bit out in the suburbs. So it just depends on where you're staying. But
all right.
Yeah,
I will continue my search for where I will get a meal and report back to you. Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That was Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer. Being a parent with kids at home during winter break, anyone who's got kids understands what's going on there. And appreciate him coming on anyway. In just a few minutes, we're going to have our second guest, Will Pelagic, will be joining us. And Will is another Panthers insider. I was actually on with Will yesterday. He is over there at WFNZ, the sports radio station there. So we'll have him on, get his perspective on the Panthers as well. I will be sharing with you guys stats, numbers, matchups, as we always do for First Look, once we finish talking with Will. If you haven't given the show a like and click subscribe, now would be a fantastic time to do that. And, you know, it is the last day where you can go over to simplyseattle.com, use code HawkBlogger15, get 15% off Seahawks gear, Mariners gear, Huskies gear, whatever it is you love, and 5% of what you buy will go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. That is where Fred Hutch allows people that are fighting for their lives to get help with transportation, temporary lodging, other things that they need. And if you go to simplyseattle.com, use code HawkBlogger15, and you buy a Simply Good hoodie for $25, $5 from that purchase will also go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. Those hoodies are normally $40. So they're already, you're going to get a great deal down to $25, and $5 goes to charity. So last day for it, take advantage while you can. And then head on over to the Sleeper app, grab the Sleeper app, download the Sleeper app. And not only can you follow your fantasy football, you can follow NBA, NHL, whatever it is you love, and free $20, no deposit required. And first time users also receive up to 100% deposit match, up to $100 if you use promo code Hawks. Terms and conditions apply. So see Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. So I thought a lot of interesting stuff there from Mike. And when we're talking about these two teams, I think the play of Bryce Young is paramount. And then the Seahawks' ability to move the football on offense and put up points. Because I'll go through some of the numbers and some of the matchups, but this is a Panthers team that does not rush the passer very well at all. Like literally dead last in the NFL in pressure rate. And if you put Sam Darnold in a situation where he's able to be comfortable in the pocket for the first time in feels like a month, 6 weeks, they've been facing a lot of even from worse team, like bad teams, they've been facing some really good pressure teams like the Vikings and the Falcons. Even though they're not great teams, they're really good at getting to the quarterback. I just like the Seahawks chances there. If Sam Darnold's feeling comfortable, you know, getting the ball to JSN, being able to take deep shots. You heard about from Mike that Rashid Shaheed has had some success against the Panthers over the years. And so we'll see how that shows up in this game. It would be fun to see Rashid Shaheed get his kind of first big game as a Seahawk, or big play down the field as a receiver for the Seahawks in this one. I'm going to do a quick look up here of Rashid Shaheed's game logs against the Carolina Panthers, and do a quick look here. So he last year, he went 3 catches for 73 yards and a touchdown. Let me see on that one. He had a 59-yard touchdown pass catch against the Panthers last year. He went 4 catches for 63 yards in the next game. This was actually 2023. And in that game, he had a 45-yard catch in that one. The 2024 one's interesting because that was with Clint Kubiak as the OC. Another game, so 2023, 3 catches, 34 yards, so not as big of a game. But he's had his last two games against the Panthers, he's put up some pretty big numbers and made some pretty big plays. So that was an interesting one from Mr. K. Let's welcome our next guest onto the show, Will Pelagic of WFNZ in Charlotte. Will, first of all, did I come close to getting the name right?
You were very, very on the money. So that's good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, yesterday when I was on with you, I heard them mention what I thought was your name, and then I didn't quite catch it. I'm like, this guy's going to come on and I'm going to make the absolute worst effort in the history of live shows trying to pronounce his name. So I appreciate you.
All good. All good, man.
So Will, first of all, how's your day going?
Things are going well. You know, it's Christmas Eve, about to go make some bolognese for a lasagna that we'll bake tomorrow for Christmas Day. So very much looking forward to that. No radio today or tomorrow for us, but I'll be back on the air on Friday getting ready for a big weekend game here in Charlotte.
Well, I was just talking to Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer, and I was asking him where to get food in Charlotte. I think what I'm getting from this is I should find your house sometime when I enter Charlotte. That sounds fantastic.
Plenty of great places around the stadium, though, to get food. Definitely.
Yeah, what's any top choices?
Depends on what you're looking for. I mean, there's a great burger joint right down the street from the stadium called Cowboy Burger Bar. There's Mama Ricotta's, which is a great Italian joint. Lots of great restaurants in the South End too. If you want just something simple like burgers, there's a great burger spot right by the stadium called Pinky's, which is awesome. So lots of great things.
That sounds fantastic. I think I'm going to be pretty close to the stadium. So sure. For people that are trying to get their hands around this Panthers team, which is a challenge given what their heights and their lows of this season, what's your take on this team?
If you have a beat on getting a handle on them, let me know how, because it has been literally the Jekyll and Hyde season for the Carolina Panthers, just based on, you know, the way that it started. You know, I think there were games early on that I think we looked at with a very critical eye against teams that we didn't think were going to be as good as they are, like Jacksonville and New England. I still think the Arizona game is one that, if you want to talk about a missed opportunity, that's one you put very much in the heightened category. But again, I think they were still trying to find their identity. They're still trying to find themselves. And this is kind of what happens. This is year two of a rebuild, and it's not the first rebuild either. It's kind of the second or third shot at it. So you have guys who have come as like a melding from the two different regimes, the Scott Fitterer regime, which was here before Dan Morgan, of course, Scott with great roots up in Seattle. And while I loved Scott as a person, unfortunately, he was, I think, lambasted for the way some of those drafts went, particularly the giving up of all the draft picks to get Bryce Young for a pick that really up until really the middle part of last year didn't look like it had proven any and borne any fruit. Now, of course, you're seeing Bryce Young start to come into his own. And I think there was definitely a big shift when Dave Canales figured out, hey, the run game needs to be the identity of this team. I think he boasted it over the course of his two seasons, but has never really put it into practice like he has, particularly in that first Atlanta game. I think that was kind of where the light bulb kind of turned on for him and said, okay, you know, we've got somebody in Rico Dowdle who can be a bell cow. Of course, Chuba Hubbard was injured during that time. When Chuba got back, he kind of struggled to get himself going as well, because I think that calf injury was still maybe on the lingering pain feeling of that. And then once the run game started to get some confidence, then the passing game started to come around, and you saw Bryce Young really start to kind of show some of that aptitude that he said and saw during the second half of last season. The defense has been, I think, the one thing you look at and say, I don't want to say it's been a constant, because there have been some eye-opening games. The Buffalo game is one of them. And also, when it comes down to it, the San Francisco game, while they did force some turnovers, they also had some unfortunate breakdowns in terms of where they broke down in that game. But the one thing is that that defense last year was abjectly awful, like historically bad numbers for yardage allowed, points per game allowed. And they've simplified a lot of things. It's not perfect. I'm very critical at times of how much the scheme gives up between the 20s. But if you're going to play that Vic Fangio style, you have to be able to do a couple of things very, very well. You have to be able to get off the field when you can. You have to limit the touchdowns, you know, turn sevens into threes or zeros, and you have to take the football away. And they weren't doing any of those things last year in terms of being able to get off the field or force turnovers. They're one of the top turnover forcing teams now in the league. And it comes down to that part of it is now starting to kind of come around. And it didn't come around right away. Like the turnovers did not come necessarily a lot early, but they forced three against San Francisco. They had the pick six against Los Angeles. And so they're starting to become more of this. There was the Panther team of lore, the old Thieves Avenue team. I wouldn't say it's quite at that level yet, but they're starting to kind of show signs of that, because turnovers have become very, very key for this team to get themselves to the point that they're at where they control their own destiny for the NFC South.
Yeah, it's great stuff, Will. And I think one of my favorite kind of stories about the Panthers this season was, I remember, I don't know how many weeks into the season, it kind of broke on social that these Panthers podcasters just were, they publicly just said, we're done.
The Meow Mix guys.
Yeah, we're done. We can't cover this team anymore. It's just we've got better things to do with our lives. And ironically, now you've got maybe one of the most competitive Panthers teams in a long time. You know, even the people that follow them really closely can't figure it out.
They got blacklisted, by the way. They were told literally, like, they tried to come back and everyone was like, no, don't. Please don't. We're playing better now that you're gone. And you know, we've got a lot of great local podcast groups that cover the Panthers. And you know, in addition, of course, to our entity, I had not actually heard of them before this demonstrative walkout, as it were. So honestly, they've become more popular in absence than I think they ever were in practice. So I don't know if that was the catalyst. There's also the viral music sensation Carolina Mike, who has kind of taken at least the Panthers Twitter sphere and social media sphere by storm. He's performed actually at a couple of games. He's actually going to perform at the Seattle game as well. So during a timeout, somebody who, again, has got this really like catchy, heavily auto-tuned song. If I had $150,000, and he like throws Monopoly money in the air, and he's, ironically enough, he's from Minnesota. He's a displaced charlatan, but he lives in Minnesota, and he like took to the internet with this song that has become almost a little bit of a rallying cry. It's funny. All redemption stories and all ascent stories in sports seem to have an anthem that surrounds them. Mm-hmm. And that one has definitely become the calling card, I think, for Panther fans as well. So
that's hilarious.
It's been an interesting year in the Panthers social media sphere.
Well, you know what? What more can you ask for than interesting after years of just abject terror from that team, mm-hmm. Week in, week out, and just a lot of things going wrong. You know, you talk about Scott Fitterer, and then you got Dan Morgan, who's also of the John Schneider ilk, and Dave Canales, who, you know, is of the Pete Carroll lineage. And what's the kind of temperature on the leadership? Because that was also really tumultuous, not just the front office, but the ownership and what was going on there. That seemed like the ownership was more in the news than the team for a while.
Yeah, I think there was a kind of shift in the way that they went about doing things when they hired Dan Morgan to that spot. They very much wanted to kind of take a hands-off approach and say, you know what, Dan's going to run the football. They hired a new president of business as well to run both the football team and the soccer team, which is also part of the Tepper Sports footprint as well. And I think that was kind of the really where it started to change. And, you know, Dan made the hire of Dave Canales, and it was very much a thing out there that the Panthers were the only team that Dave Canales spoke to. And it was a situation where, oh, well, you know, you hired basically the one guy who would take the job at this point. And I think there was an understanding that for somebody who only had 1 year as a coordinator at the professional level, even though he had a real celebrated career of developing quarterbacks and becoming the quarterback whisperer, both obviously in Seattle and in Tampa, it was probably going to be a learn on the job type situation for Dave. And I think there have been some parts of that. There are times where this play calling that it gets a little too cute. And one of the things too, that I think he's part celebrated and part, I would say ridiculed, is, you know, his daringness. We've given him the name Double Down Dave. We also had Riverboat Ron back in the day. So it's a very apt thing that I think a lot of Panther fans have attached to in terms of his willingness to go for it on fourth down. They go for it on fourth down more than any team in the league. And by substance, also have a higher success rate than any team in the league because of the breadth of the attempts. But at the same point in time, situations that he does it in, and then the plays that are called during those situations sometimes are heavy points of criticism. I go back to the New Orleans game when, you know, they went for it on fourth down. I didn't mind the call to go for it on fourth down. They were up, you know, 7 points at the time. They had a chance to make it a two possession game with a field goal, and instead they end up going and turning it into they end up not making it on fourth down. And as a result, New Orleans goes off and scores two possessions later, and it ends up, you know, proving out that they lose by three. So maybe that game goes to overtime if you kick the field goal there, because it was a situation, it was in the fourth quarter. But that's part of his DNA. And I think also there are times where he's abandoned the run a little bit too much, which is something that I think a lot of Panther fans have pointed to in games.
He apologized, where, you know, right? San Francisco game.
Yep.
That's a pretty rare occurrence, Will, for a coach to like say, hey, no, I blew that.
It's been a couple of times this year where he said, you know, I need to look at the way that we run the football. And again, I think it's very hard to be a so uber run dominant team in 2025, when all the rules are basically pointed to, hey, we're begging you to pass, we're begging you to make things happen there. But from that perspective, it's definitely something where you look at it and say it has become part of their DNA. And I think when it comes down to it, he needs to kind of trust his gut a little bit when it comes to the way that he administers this football team. And I think, again, he's gotten a lot better over the course of the season, which has definitely helped the Panthers.
So, Will, when you look at the Seahawks, what do you see?
I see a good football team. I mean, I love your head coach. I think he's very much stabilized the situation. And you know, when it comes down to it, the big bet they made on Sam Darnold is paying off. And I love it for him because I think, you know, at the end of the 22 season, you know, there was kind of this crossroads. Like, do you run it back with Sam? Do you try to go and get a quarterback? You know, there was this air of kind of, okay, maybe you kind of continue the Steve Wilks era and and try to make that all kind of work over a balance of a full season. They made the hard right turn to Frank Reich and to Bryce Young, and it didn't initially work. And seeing where Sam went to San Francisco initially, then Minnesota, and now here in Seattle, it's been great to see. That defense has got it's giving Legion of Boom, to use the lexicon of our time, when it comes to the way they've played as well. And I think, too, it's a well-rounded football team. I know you mentioned when we had our conversation yesterday that that one thing you'd want to see better is a run game, which, again, it's something where if you're looking at this game from Panthers perspective, it's not one where I look at and say favors Carolina, particularly with what they're good at defensively. They become a much better run defense team. The pass defense is kind of where they can be vulnerable, and especially because they don't travel JC Horn on the best receiver. And I know that, you know, if you're thinking that JC is going to travel with JSN, it's not going to happen. He's going to basically play on the boundary and be a little bit they're going to put Mike Jack to the wide side of the field a lot of times, and it's going to be a situation where sometimes teams are able to, you know, move their best receiver around and avoid JC Horn that way. And it's just not the way Ajero Averro employs to play it. I think also, you know, there's opportunities in the middle of the field, which can definitely be a big part of what Seattle wants to do as well. Based on the fact that, you know, you've got some different options as well with Cooper Kupp as well. So from that perspective, this is an offense, I think, that's going to be able to score points against Carolina. Conversely, you know, Carolina's been playing with a lot of confidence themselves. I think this could be a game where we see some points, Brian. I think, you know, it's not one where I look at and say, you know, could be a defensively oriented game like the Indianapolis game for y'all. I think we could see, you know, both teams in the 20s. I don't necessarily favor Carolina to win this game, because I think I also, you know, human nature kind of takes over in that sense, just based on the fact that we know that Week 18 is the one for all the marbles. I think I'm not saying it'd be crazy for Miami to beat Tampa Bay head to head, but, you know, with Quinn Ewers at quarterback, I'm not giving a lot of hope in the Dolphins to do that. The only thing that I think would maybe give you a hope is that, you know, Tampa comes out and is the team we've seen over the last 9 weeks, where, you know, they've dropped 7 of 9. Like, it's right. That's the thing that I think is most surprising to me, is the fact that they've just been in such free fall. A lot of it tied to Baker Mayfield's injury, but at the same point in time, I still think they're good enough to beat Miami head to head to set up a winner take all matchup. Not that they won't put everything they need to into this game, because Dave Canales has said all the right things. You know, they're not going to scoreboard watch. They're not going to dictate their player personnel decision-making based on the way the crossover result is going. But, and I think, again, there's something to be said also for momentum. They've not played two back-to-back games well over the course of this season since, like, early in the year, you know, and that's something that would be a nice thing to see. I think it's possible they play well and still not get the victory. But at the same point in time, this is a juggernaut coming in. I know Seattle's got everything to play for in terms of seeding. It's not a game I'd favor Carolina in, but at the same point in time, I wouldn't be shocked if they also pulled the upset because of all the factors involved. And maybe they get a turnover or two. Maybe they make things happen. And something that I brought up to you yesterday, they have been the giant killer. They've played up to a couple of these teams. They've beaten Green Bay. They've beaten the Los Angeles Rams. They beat the Cowboys earlier in the year, which is looking like a better victory. You know, I know that the Dallas has very much been up and down, EKG-like as well themselves. But at the same point in time, they've definitely got some skins on the wall that have made you look like, hey, you know what? They're not just beating up on patsies.
All right, last thing here for Will Pelagic from WFNZ over there in Charlotte. So, Will, if the Panthers do win this game, how will that happen? What will have to happen for that to be the outcome?
I think you see a very similar game to what Bryce did against the Atlanta Falcons, where, you know, he's got it running on all cylinders. He's throwing for, you know, 300 yards and the run game is going well. I think that's something that has to happen. You have to see the run game get back to the level that it's been at. It's been kind of tepid over the course of the last couple of weeks. They did run for 100 yards, but it was more of a collective 100 yards. There wasn't one particular guy who was that part of it. But I think you need to see a major offensive output. I don't think Carolina wins this game in like a defensive struggle. I think they're going to have to be able to score points with Seattle, because I think it's going to be very similar to the Falcon game or the Ram game, where you see Bryce Young come out and throw a couple of touchdown passes. You see them, you know, obviously force turnovers. And I think the other thing, too, is they have to be able to make Sam Darnold uncomfortable. And that's, if you want to talk about a big Achilles heel for this Panthers team this season, pass rush has been a significant downgrade. And that's something that wasn't even a big part of last year. I think Jadeveon Clowney was their leading sack getter last year, and it was something around like 5.5, 6.5 sacks. It was not high. So from that perspective, it's a situation where if you're Carolina, you've got to figure out different ways to get pressure on the quarterback. Ejiro Averro loves to scheme up these, you know, these middle blitzes, these backside blitzes, particularly with the corner. Sometimes they'll throw a missile blitz in with Trevon Mayrig. They have to time those properly and get Sam off his mark. Otherwise, if you're gonna drop 7, drop 8, and let Sam Darnold throw the football, it's going to be a long day for the Panther defense. So they have to figure out how to disrupt Sam Darnold. They have to figure out how to get some offensive momentum and obviously keep pace with what Seattle can do offensively.
Will, great stuff. Appreciate you. Will you be in the press box there on Sunday?
Normally I would be, but I tell my wife every year I like to take her to one game a year. So I'm actually going to be in the stands with the fans on Sunday. So I'll be downstairs hooting and hollering for at least 3.5 quarters before I go and do our post-game show across the street at the WFNZ Doghouse just across from the stadium.
Well, I hope the rain holds off and you get the nice 70-degree weather that might be happening. But either way, appreciate your time, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Brian. Merry Christmas.
All right. That is Will Pelagic of WFNZ in Charlotte. Good stuff from Will. And, you know, you can hear it from both Will and Mike. They're not expecting the Panthers to pull off this win. But they also acknowledge that nobody knows what's going on with this Panthers team. And they've done it in crazier situations before. I think it's also pretty interesting the notion that from a human nature standpoint, both Mike and Will mentioned that Panthers really just know this game probably isn't going to matter as much. And even if they're saying all the right things, their mind's going to be on week 18 down in Tampa Bay. So that's actually, of all the things we talked about with those guys, that's probably the thing that's most meaningful to me, is that, if you can have that intangible edge, because that's honestly one of the only things I think the Panthers could have an edge in, is that the Seahawks are coming off a game against the Rams that was a super heated, emotional division game. And then you're going to have another division game on the road next week against the 49ers. This is the one where it's like, man, are the Seahawks going to be able to bring their absolute best to Carolina for a 10 a.m., another 10 a.m. East Coast game? Yes, Mike McDonald has never lost a 10 a.m. road game as head coach, but there doesn't mean that they're simple or easy to do. So I'm really curious about how both teams come out of the gates in this one. And the other thing that I think kind of stands out to me, and we'll go through the numbers here in a second, is something that Will said at the very end. If I'm the Panthers, I don't bet that all of a sudden I'm going to be able to get a pass rush. I actually say, you know what? I'm going to lean into this. We suck at getting to the passer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop 7 and I'm going to make life really difficult on Sam Darnold. We're going to try to get some turnovers. We're going to try to get him to make a decision that, he's made too many times this year. And by the way, the Panthers play the least amount of man coverage in the entire NFL, or flip it around, they play more zone coverage than any team in the NFL. That means that generally you're not going to be getting a lot of disguises in this. It's not like they're switching, you know, and making it hard. That I think is in favor of Sam Darnold. But that might be their best bet, is just to have as many guys in coverage as possible, make those zone windows as narrow as possible, and see if maybe you can, you know, dare the Seahawks to throw into like that type of coverage and hope that they don't run the football with Ken Walker. Like, that might be their best bet. And then offensively, it's probably, you know, it's some simple things. It's, can they get the run game going against the Seahawks defense, and can they get Bryce Young out into space and creating and being a little bit of that savvy, resourceful, mover outside the pocket who can make some smart plays. And that's what he looked like against Tampa Bay. Even though his numbers weren't huge, he was super efficient and made almost all good decisions there. So, yeah, interesting stuff there. Let's get into the numbers. If you haven't already given the show a like and click subscribe, please do. Let me get to super chats before I get to numbers. Super Sauce XL says, Ever and Dalo or Cali Soul are great places to eat in Charlotte. Azul Tacos or Soul Food are also solid and closer to the same. Well, appreciate that, man. Jay Malfair says, why is John Schneider not executive of the year? Well, the technical reason is because they haven't voted for it yet. It happens after the season. But, you know, with Sam Darnold making the Pro Bowl this year, that means John Schneider's done something that nobody's done. Almost nobody's done even once as a GM. He's done it twice, traded away a former Pro Bowl quarterback, got a bunch. You got trade value in return. Saw that quarterback that he traded away have a massive drop off. Then the quarterback that you replace him with immediately makes the Pro Bowl. Like, that just doesn't happen. And he's done it twice. So that move alone, I think, is executive of the year material, not to mention all the other things that John's done. Mike Prescott says, I read the ultimate result we're rooting for is a tie in the San Francisco-Chicago game. Since that is unlikely, who are we really rooting for? It's interesting. I haven't actually done the tie scenario, but that's a fun one. So I am generally rooting for the Bears because I always want the 49ers to lose. That's kind of my simple view. I think that the Seahawks are in a position where it's not about rooting for other teams. It's about rooting for the Seahawks and making sure the Seahawks play their best ball, because they just have to win their two games and then they get exactly what they want. There's nothing more that they can get than the top seed. And the only thing that has to happen for them to get the top seed is to win their last two games. If they lose either of the last two games, they're not going to get the top seed. There are scenarios where they could, but it's not going to happen. So win the next two, that's it. Now, to give you a little bit more, the Bears winning would eliminate the 49ers from the number one seed conversation. What that could do is, it's possible that Kyle Shanahan, given all the injuries that they faced and all that's gone on, he may choose to say, I don't really care whether we're the, you know, maybe we have a chance to get to the fourth seed or whatever. Not the fourth seed. It would be like the fifth seed versus the sixth seed. And maybe he's just like, I don't really care. We're going to rest some guys. So we're as healthy as possible going into the playoffs. So that could be a benefit if the Bears win. If the 49ers win against the Bears, then the Rams are eliminated from the number one seed and from the division. So, I mean, that's why I'm like, yeah, whatever. I mean, the Seahawks are going to have to go out and take care of business no matter what anyone else does. Let's just watch them do that, like, and be thankful that we don't have to scoreboard watch, really, other than, you know, I hate the 49ers and I want them to lose all the time. So I'm going to always just root for them to lose. Okay, let's get into the numbers. And we'll start with DVOA. And we already kind of talked about, actually, let me talk about lineup notes as well. I'll leave the DVOA up there so you guys can look at that. But some lineup things to be aware of for the Seahawks: Derek Hall is suspended for this game. He will not be available. He's not even at the facility for this week. So what does that mean? It means that DeMarcus Lawrence, Boye Mafe, Uchenna Nwosu, most likely they're going to get additional reps with Derek Hall out. The other possibility is that Connor O'Toole or Jared Ivey, the rookie edge players, could be active for this game. Connor O'Toole's been active as recently as Thursday against the Rams, but he's been in special teams. They could take some of Derek Hall's reps. Connor O'Toole is more similar to Boye Mafe. Jared Ivey is a little bit more the power edge. And I think if I go back and look, I'm going to do this really quickly. I believe when Derek Hall missed a game earlier this year, it was Jared Ivey who came in his stead. So let's do a quick double check of my memory. Derek Hall missed time in weeks 6 and 7. He missed those both of those games. And what we saw was an increase in, well, in the first game, both Jared Ivey and Connor O'Toole were active. They only got a combined 7 snaps. Generally, what we saw, I mean, Mike Morris got some extra snaps with that going on. And so what possibly could happen there is Riley Mills could also get some extra reps, which he's kind of taken the Mike Morris snaps. That also could mean that they decide to play more 3 defensive tackle looks, which is what they did a decent amount against the Rams. If you play 3 defensive tackles, you only need 1 edge. So you could still play 5-man fronts, but that could also kind of change the math about how many edge snaps you need. So that's the one main one. The other one would be Charles Cross. Probably not going to be back this game. Josh Jones will probably start at left tackle for a second straight week. How amazing is it that, you know, that's not a terrifying thought, both because Josh Jones played pretty darn well against the Rams, but also because the Panthers don't rush the passer very well. Then safety Kobe Bryant, unlikely to play in this game. So that would probably mean Ty Okada is back in the lineup next to Julian Love, assuming that there's no other injuries there going on that we'll find out about later today. So that's the Seattle lineup notes. From a Carolina perspective, as we said before, they'll get their left tackle Ekem Ekwonu back. They also may get back Tershawn Wharton, the defensive tackle. And then the Robert Hunt thing, that was actually of note to me in the conversation with Mike Kay, because he would be a huge benefit, a huge boost for that offensive line if he was back. And the fact that it sounds like he probably won't be back this week is, I guess, good news for the Seahawks, and maybe good news for the Panthers that he'll be ready maybe next week against the Bucks. All right, so this is looking at DVOA, and so if you look at the Seahawks DVOA, there might be something that stands out to you. They have slid to number 2 in DVOA. I tweeted out on Monday they were number 1, which was true, but the Rams and the Seahawks are so close. The margin is so razor thin that the 49ers beating up like they did on the Colts actually improved the Rams' DVOA numbers because they beat the 49ers. DVOA, the OA stands for opponent adjusted. So as the 49ers team strength improved, the Rams win over the 49ers had more value. So now the Rams are number 1 by a hair over the Seahawks on DVOA. But I think it's essentially those two teams are equivalent. Now, the rest of this, it's not pretty if you're a Panthers fan. I mean, there's nothing here that's particularly encouraging as a Panthers fan. The closest kind of comparison here would be the Panthers run offense, which is the 15th ranked DVOA run offense against the Seahawks' number 1 ranked run defense. Similarly, the Panthers 25th ranked run defense goes up against the 18th ranked Seahawks run offense. But keep in mind, the Seahawks run offense has been 12th in DVOA since week 10. So it's been improving, and you heard from Mike Kay that Ken Walker is kind of like the absolute worst case scenario runner against this Panthers defense that struggles when guys get to the edge on them. So that is the DVOA picture. I think it's also worth noting that the Panthers are 27th in defending tight ends. Seahawks have placed a lot of teams that are pretty good at defending tight ends. We'll see if this means something for AJ Barner or, you know, Eric Saubert or Nick Kallerup, but they've lost Elijah Arroyo for now. So, you know, the downfield threat is not as much there, but this would have been an interesting potential Elijah Arroyo game if he was available. I will also highlight that the Panthers are fifth in defending running backs as receivers. That kind of caught my attention because typically zone teams struggle to rally to the ball and they're vulnerable to swing passes to running backs. As a case in point, if we look at, I'm going to pull this up real quick. Give me 1 second. But if we look at receiving versus scheme, and we look at Ken Walker, and we just look at the Seahawks in general, I'm pretty sure I looked at this earlier in the year, and Ken Walker was significantly better against zone than against man. And that remains the case. Ken Walker has a 77.8 receiving grade this year against zone coverage. He has a 55.5 against man. What does that look like in terms of real numbers? Ken Walker has only 2 catches for 11 yards against man coverage this year. He has 20 catches in 23 targets for 218 yards against zone. So this could be something that shows up and is at least worth kind of paying attention to. I'd also call out, as far as other guys on the Seahawks that really excel against zone, JSN, of course, very good. Derek Young has actually done pretty well against zone coverage this year. And then AJ Barner has been pretty much good against man or zone. Cody White has had some big moments against zone this year. So yeah, I think Ken Walker, again, is a very important figure in this game, as he's been in a lot of the games lately. And then if you look at the Seahawks on offense, this is a look at, let me see if I can narrow this a little bit. There, that's better. So if you look at the Seahawks on offense, there's a few places where the Panthers have some advantage. The Panthers defense has been a little bit more stubborn in the red zone. They're 14th in the red zone, and the Seahawks red zone offense has stalled. We talked about that a little bit on Monday. High red zone in particular, 11 to the 20 yard line. They've kind of stalled lately. Rushing yards, yards per rush, the Seahawks still do not rank well, rush EPA in any of those areas. The Panthers are not great against the run in those numbers, but do have slight advantages. The biggest advantage here by far for the Panthers is their ability to take the ball away. And the fact of the matter is Sam Darnold and the Seahawks offense turns the ball over more than almost any other team. So that is a big part of where the Panthers can get an advantage in this game, is finding a way to take the ball away. The other thing that I'd call out for you is, you know, two things. Yards per play, the Seahawks are third in the NFL in yards per play on offense. Despite all the hand-wringing about this offense, they are third in the NFL in yards per play. Panthers are 24th in yards per play allowed. Then if you look at sack rate, the Seahawks are 8th in the NFL in sacks allowed by percentage of dropbacks. The Panthers are 26th in the NFL in sack rate. They're 32nd in the NFL in quarterback pressure rate. So that's, I think that's a pretty good sign for the Seahawks, but time will tell. You'll see that the passer rating for the Panthers, despite all these challenges, they're 10th in the NFL in passer rating allowed because they've taken the ball away so much. They're also pretty good at limiting explosives. They're 13th in explosive pass rate against. So you're going to have to earn it against this team. And if Sam Darnold tries to force the ball down the field, that might be a problem. But the reality is that, you know, the Panthers also do not have the fastest corners. Their ability to sorry, I want to check one thing real quick. Where'd it go? No. Yeah, I'm looking for something here and couldn't find it. I think the Seahawks' ability to get the receivers deep is one thing. And the ability to kind of dissect zones is another. Sam's actually been very good against zone defenses most of this year. He's some of his best numbers have come against zone defenses. So, we'll see. We will see how that translates in terms of this game. All right. Next, we go down. I will just say, player wise, the guys that kind of stand out to me in looking at the Panthers defense, Derek Brown is a game wrecker on the inside of a line. JC Horn, Mike Jackson are both playmakers at corner. They do give up quite a bit. JC Horn's given up 5 touchdown passes. Mike Jackson's given up 3. JC Horn, for as good of a player as he is, has struggled at times this year. So I think those are still guys that can make plays. I would also point out that Nick Scourton, the rookie, I think is having a nice year. We heard from Mike Kay about how smart he is. The other thing that kind of jumped out to me is that if you look at their linebackers, whether it's Christian Rosenboom or Trevin Wallace or whoever else, they really struggle in coverage. So there's a lot of room in the middle it's a weak middle for that Panthers defense. I think the Seahawks, this is a game, honestly, the Seahawks should be looking to try to score 30 plus points. Like, that should be the goal. And if they put up those kind of points, then there's not many teams that are going to be able to compete with them on the defensive side to do that. And I just think the Panthers, it's a tough matchup for them. It really is a tough matchup for them. All right. Next, we'll look at the Seahawks on defense. This is when the Panthers have the ball. And you'll see it's not a pretty picture. Like, this is why the Panthers defense needs to find some way to take the ball away from the Seahawks to get what they need. And I look at this and you're talking about Seahawks are number 2 in the NFL in points scored. Panthers are 27th in points allowed. Seahawks defense is 8th in yards allowed. Panthers are 25th. Yards per play, it's 2 versus 24. EPA per play, 2 versus 22. Third downs, 2 versus 17. It just kind of keeps going on and on and on. The one place where it gets a little narrower is the running game. Seahawks have the 3rd ranked defense in terms of rush yards allowed against the 10th ranked rushing offense. Yards per rush, it's 1 versus 14. Rush EPA, it's 1 versus 13. I really do respect the Panthers offensive line, and you got former Seahawk Damian Lewis on there. You've got, for them, it's unfortunate. Austin Corbett, who usually plays center, has moved to guard with Robert Hunt out. So they've kind of gotten weaker at both guard and center as a result. And, but they've got 2 good running backs, Chuba Hubbard and Rico Dowdle. Rico Dowdle's, the guy that's really been, I think, making a huge name for himself this year. But that's key. Like, if they need to be able to run the ball. The other thing that I think the Panthers have that has sometimes given the Seahawks trouble is, Bryce Young's a mobile quarterback who is able to create and manipulate the pocket, sometimes get out of the pocket. That hasn't always worked out. The Seahawks are not the fastest defensive line, even though they've got some speed elsewhere. Their edges are not, the absolute fastest guys to track down, mobile quarterbacks that way. So that's one thing. Like, basically, if I'm looking at this, I'm thinking you need Bryce Young to be creative and create some off schedule plays. You need the run game to take some of the pressure off Bryce Young, and you need to protect the football. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but I just don't see a clear advantage for the Panthers on offense when they have the ball. I just see some places where they have some strengths that they could try to kind of bring to the forefront. When you look at special teams, it's similarly not great for the Panthers. The one thing that stands out in their favor is they are the 2nd ranked kick coverage team, which obviously with the way things have been going with Rashid Shaheed, kick coverage is a big deal. The Seahawks rank fourth in punt return yardage. They rank fourth in average kick returns. So they are a lethal return team. Panthers have had some challenges in punt coverage. They're 21st there. The Panthers have also just not kicked many long field goals. You heard about Dave Canales going for a lot of fourth downs. The Panthers are 27th in the NFL in field goals over 50 yards. So you're not going to see the Panthers kick a lot of long field goals. They're going to try to go four downs, which could give the Seahawks some advantageous field position if they're able to get off the field in those moments. So that's kind of the story on this game between these two teams. I see it as a game that the Seahawks very much are the better team, the more talented team, the more complete team, but so were the Rams. And so were the Packers, probably, if you believe that. And the Packers lost at home and the Rams lost on the road. And part of how the Rams lost was, you know, those gambles on fourth down for Canales worked out with some long touchdowns. There was some turnovers, pick six, sack, strip sacks of Matt Stafford. So, yeah, I mean, is it possible? Sure. I mean, look, the Seahawks were they trailing or tied at halftime with the Panthers? With the Falcons, like not so long ago, right? Like it's a 10 a.m. game, and there's no way that the Seahawks look at the film of the Panthers and feel like, oh man, this is just as tough as the game we just played against the Rams, or it's as tough as the game that we're going to play against the 49ers. And yeah, it was 6-6, by the way, at halftime. So against the Falcons. So it's just a matter of whether the Seahawks play to their standard. If they do, this game shouldn't be close. It really shouldn't be. But the Panthers are scrappy, and they have every reason to make this a tense game for the Seahawks in terms of just trying to prove where they are as they head into the playoffs. So looking forward to this one. I will tell you, as far as Real Hawk Talk tonight, given that it's Christmas Eve, we will probably take the night off. There's a chance that Jeff and I will do a show. We're kind of debating that right now. It's a little bit like I'm hesitant to not have any Real Hawk Talk the week of the game, but we'll figure it out. For us, it's not Christmas Eve. It's just another night, but I know for a lot of people it is. So we'll see. We'll figure that out. So keep an eye out for that. If you have not watched the interview I did with Ken Walker, please do. I think it's really rare that Ken does interviews. Oral-B is a sponsor he's working with, and they reached out. And so, you know, got a little chance to get to know him a little better. I thought he was great in the interview. Talked about challenges of kind of coming up to speed on this offense and the run game. And talked about his relationship with his dad and this season in general. So good stuff. Make sure you check that out. It is already posted and now available. It was a members first episode. So that's part of why being a club level or higher member of this channel is a great way to get access to members only content. Also gets you access to the Discord server, where patreon.com/hawkblogger. You can go there to also get ad-free audio of this show and access to the Discord server there. And let me just double check to see if we've got any super chats that I have not addressed over on Patreon. Sorry, not Patreon, on Venmo. And we do. Venmo.com/Brian-Nemhauser is up there. You can find it in my link tree or other places. We've got a few. So Amit Guha says, "Hey Brian, the pod has become somewhat of a morning ritual for me now, almost like coffee. Do you think K9 can start to cement himself as a premier back as we enter the playoffs? And what does the team need to do to let him get there? Thanks and much love for you and the HB team." Well, that's very nice of you, Amit. Do I think he can cement himself as a premier back? I don't at this point, not with the two games remaining. Like, in the playoffs, he could. Like, I think building into the playoffs, he could, but not with the last two games of the season. I do feel like there's something there. And while it's been frustrating, even against the Colts, it was like, man, he's getting these ankle tackles. that are keeping him. He's been on the cusp of these explosive running plays week in, week out for a while. And he finally got one this past week. He also had the explosive reception. I'm just a big believer in what he adds to this offense. And I think that it does feel like, if you listen to the interview, he talked about that it's been a process for him to get comfortable with this particular style of run game. And he's starting to feel like he's getting it. So I'm hopeful. I am. Theo McDonald says, hello, young fan here. I have a question. I've been to 5 games, 2022 Giants versus Seahawks. They won that one. 2023 Eagles versus Seahawks, the Lock legacy win. This year, Texans, Vikings, Rams. My voice is still recovering, so I'm undefeated. So use all of my money to go to every game or save Juju for the championship. Man, I don't know. I'll say this, playoff games are special. First playoff home game in a while will be very special. If the Seahawks are able to make that happen, I'm certainly looking forward to being in the stands for that game. And I'll tell you, championship home games, they are something to behold. Every single one that's been in Seattle has been a core memory. First time again, 2005 against the Panthers. The stadium has never been louder. It will never be louder than it was. It was insane. If they were measuring decibels, it would have been like 150. Like the record's like 134 or something. And it was unreal. And then obviously the 49ers championship game and then the Packers, like those games are unbelievable. And it's very possible that this first game in the playoffs could be against the Rams, could be against the 49ers. Like, buckle up. It's going to be a ride. So I don't have an answer for you. I wish you the best in making that decision. Nathaniel Robertson says, Merry Christmas, go Hawks. Well, I appreciate the thought. I don't celebrate Christmas, but I appreciate the thought. Merry Christmas to those that do. Travis Hofkamp says, love the analytics on the show. Sorry, let me clear my throat. All right. Love the analytics on the show. Have you seen a correlation between points scored based off of the percentage number of play action plays ran per game for the Hawks? I've not done play action correlation for the Seahawks. I did see the Seahawks rank around 13th in play action rate in the NFL. And one of the things I was wondering about with Clint Kubiak is, even though he comes from this tree of Kubiaks and Shanahan style offenses that do a lot of play action, he had ranked like 19th or 20th or less in both Minnesota and New Orleans when he was their OCs. So I was like, what's with this guy not doing play action? And the first game of the season, did not play action other than one time. And it sounds like Mike McDonald, you know, had a meeting of the minds, and that's been remedied because they've been a heavy play action team since then. And, you know, it's certainly been a big part of the Seahawks offense. All right. That will do it for this episode. Make sure you give it a like, click subscribe. Have a wonderful Christmas Eve if you celebrate it with your family, with your loved ones, your friends, whoever you do it with. Hopefully, whatever you want is under the tree. I think what we all want is some more Seahawks wins. And we'll either be back with you tonight, whether or not folks attend, or I haven't decided what I might take the day off tomorrow. We'll kind of figure that out. The Seahawks are taking the day off tomorrow. I will be at the VMAC today as they have practice, and we'll get the practice report and all that good stuff. For everyone who's been with us today, have a great day. Appreciate you, and take care.